And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 804. Continuing our team-by-team previews of the 2026 fantasy baseball season, heading to the Bronx to talk about the New York Yankees or the Fighting Aaron Judges, however you want to go about it. In order to help me break this team down, you might know him from the show. He's a friend of the show. He's one of my co-hosts on the show. He is my co-host usually on Mondays as things are rocking and rolling throughout the season and off season. You can find him on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. Ben Tidd, how are we doing?
Doing pretty good, Bubba. Yeah, when you told me that it was the Yankees show, I was pretty surprised. It was here already. But it's about to be the start of the new year. At least I think you already released one, the Blue Jays preview, by the time everyone listens to this. By the time we're recording this, it's in real life, it's already been released. So, yeah, it's going to be wild. And I have a lot of listening to do once they're all out. That's 30 pods, and got to check them all out.
Yep, 30 pods. A lot of players discussed over 30 pods. So, yeah, a lot of fun stuff. Labor of love, as one may say. But more importantly, since we haven't chatted in a couple weeks before we start talking Yankees, for those that don't know, Ben Tidd is drafting. So how's that first draft itch going for you?
It's going, yeah. I told you I had my first goof of draft season earlier today on the couple days before the start of the new year. Just trying to play chicken with ADP and just getting a sense of how people are treating players. Like you can download ADP, of course, from NFBC and have the most recent drafts. And then Ryan's got his awesome ADP tool, which I've referenced already in this draft. But just to be out drafting is awesome. Like my team so far, which is good. But, this happens to me every year, but you don't really forget about it, but you just don't think about it. But the decisions you make on a slow clock can be so tough because you have so much time to make a decision. And there's like four guys that you want to take, especially in a 15-team draft where you have so much time until your next pick usually comes around, that you trying to decide between a couple of players can be really tough. And those decisions are welcomed, but they're also kind of annoying too, because you want to take three guys at once, but the software doesn't allow you to do that. So you just got to try to figure out who's going to be best at that time. And then hopefully maybe one of the two guys comes back to you. If not, and you just got to figure out who you want else when it's your pick again. So, but it's great. I'm going to be drafting continuously probably through February. So the journey has begun.
Yes. It's great to hear that you're up and running in this situation. And the way you said the frustration of not being able to grab all three, that's why we love auctions now, is you could get all three if you really wanted to. And but yeah, it's good to get back in the streets, see how it all goes. But yeah, we'll have to kind of I'm looking forward to seeing how it continues to go for you and how things change from draft to draft, as most of us have already experienced that have been going through this.
Bubba did like my first two picks, though. I did post him in the Bubba and the Boom Patreon, though. He was a fan of the first 10, at least most.
Yes, it was the first two picks were absolutely outstanding. Big, big fan of that. When you go with, it was what, J-Rod and Caminero?
Yeah, Caminero fell to 19.
It's beautiful, absolutely beautiful.
I think it was 19.
So, yes, big, big fan of that one. All right, we'll get more of that from you in the future, though. Let's get to the Yankees. Let's talk Yankees. Before we get into the actual players, what's your thoughts on how 2025 ended up going?
It was fine. It's hard to say if they did enough to make a push in the World Series for the World Series. Of course, it wasn't as good as 2024 when they made it to the World Series against the Dodgers, but I don't know. The Yankees, they beat the Red Sox, I believe, in the wild card round, and then they lost to the Blue Jays, who ended up being the AL champs. And for whatever reason, the Yankees just couldn't beat the Blue Jays all season. I think the Blue Jays were like five games above them in the season series. And I just don't understand how the Blue Jays did it. Like, the roster is fine, but I just never thought it was AL East worthy, let alone AL period worthy of winning the flag. But when it comes to the Yankees, they it was a good year. Most fans of teams just want their teams being competitive, and the Yankees always do that. Fortunately for me, but we as Yankee fans have higher standards because they are the Yankees, and you expect the playoffs should be a given. It's just how they do in October. That's really how the season comes down to it. And I don't know, at least they won the first series, but it was a little disappointing because when you're in the World Series for the first time since 2009, I think it was the last time they won, it was the last time they were in it. You kind of hope that they'll win at this time, but and that was in 2024. So getting back to the playoffs was good this past season, but not the best finish to the season.
Yeah, George Steinbrenner basically convinced you guys every year needs to be a World Series year, so it's a little different. It's a nice mentality to have, but to be realistic, it's
unrealistic though.
Yeah, yeah. So it's to get a little back to earth, but every year they have a shot. It just depends on this first man we'll discuss, Aaron Judge. If he plays a full season, you have a shot. That's the way I'll say it. He played 152 games last year. It's been 152 or 148 or more in 4 out of 5. Last year, at 53 home runs, back-to-back 50-plus home run seasons, 3 of the last 4 in that regard. 137 runs scored. My goodness. Hit .331. Just an absolute monster. Absolute beast. It's him and Ohtani going 1-2 in every draft, pretty much every draft. You'll have your outliers. I don't know how much you can really say about Aaron Judge, but what are your thoughts on Aaron Judge this year?
Yeah, he's easily my number two player. You could argue he's number one overall because his average, there's a good chance it will be better than Ohtani's. And yep. Ohtani should beat a Judge in steals, but I guess it comes down to, do you want more average, more steals? Do you care more about outfield eligibility versus util only? But yeah, Judge should at least be gone by pick 2 in every draft, regardless of format or size. And so I have it. He's just a beast. Looking at his stats, his last 5 seasons, 4 of them, he's been essentially fully healthy. Almost 150 games for the last 5 seasons. He had the fluky toe thing when he ran into the wall in Dodger Stadium in 2023. That's not really something you can hold against him. So, and in 3 of the last 4 seasons, he has had double-digit steals, which you wouldn't expect from a slugger like him. And he's hit 300 3 of the last 4 seasons. So for you get 50 homers, a 300 average, probably 150 plus runs and RBIs combined with 10 steals. That's a beast.
Yep, I agree. It's absolutely amazing what he's been doing. And early on, it was like 4, 5, 6 years ago, it was, can he stay healthy for a full year? But to your point, he's been doing it. Blame the Dodgers anytime you can. So that's a good excuse for why he hasn't made it 4 straight seasons of just beasting out everywhere. So yeah, it's a good argument that it probably gets mentioned enough, but I don't know if it does. Is like, it seems like everyone just goes Shohei, especially this time of year in DCs, because you have the options to keep him as a pitcher or a hitter. It's like having 51 players almost as you're drafting. But you know, let's all be real, you're pretty much using Shohei as a hitter majority of the time. Judge's average is elite for what he does, because most average guys we talk about, Ben, they're not hitting 40 plus home runs, let alone 50. And they're not like the runs, the RBIs. Like, is 19% walk rate almost equals his strikeout rate? Like, it's for a power hitter, he does things that you just don't see very often. He's a freak. And I say that in a very, very complimentary way. So it's great to see the Judge situation. And I do, like, it's not easy for me. I've had the one pick once so far in my like 7 drafts, and I've gone Shohei, but it wasn't like, hey, the draft just started and I clicked it right away. I like sat there and thought about it. It wasn't as automatic. So I might go Judge the next time. Let's put it that way.
I was going to ask you that. If you get one again, what would you do? So
I probably would go Judge. I'd probably go Judge to mix it up, just because I think he is that good. It's just a matter of, I can't even say if he's healthy. Like we just said, he's been doing that. So he's awesome.
Yeah, if you go Shohei one time and then Judge the next, you're not going to lose your draft in the second. You're not going to lose your league in the second one just because you pit went with Judge, unless he gets hurt. But that's a different story, though. It's
you can't decide that right now. So yeah. All right. Usually I kind of try to go down either ADP or just roster resource. But since you're on the show, I think the next guy we have to talk about is the one, the only Rice baby. Ben Rice, who is catcher first base eligible now, should primarily play first base, which is why he has an ADP of around 52 over the last 7 days. That gets him quite the boost, having that catcher eligibility. Ben Rice hit 26 home runs last year by hitting .255 in 138 games. I know you like Ben Rice. I like Ben Rice. Do you like Ben Rice enough to draft him at ADP 52?
In my first draft, I did not take Rice yet. And also I wanted to say I should have brought like some rice with me so I could throw it in the air when we're doing the intro, but I don't make a mess. Rice is a beast. I've been a big fan of his. After last season, he helped me win some money, and as a Yankee fan, it's great to see a homegrown Yankee actually produce. And they gave him a shot. They called him up last year in 2024, and he played part, like, he had some good metrics, but average was poor. He didn't play all the time. He was kind of a catcher. They didn't really know what they're going to do with him because they had Austin Wells. And now this year in 2025, they out of spring training, he was crushing the ball. They gave him a shot every day playing time. There's a time in the middle of the season where Boone was being annoying and they didn't play him all the time, but they realized he was one of their best hitters and he finished it out. And because of that, he has catcher eligibility still because he ended up catching enough in the second half because they wanted to fit in all the pieces. And I have Rice as my, I think he's my catcher. He's my catcher three, I think. He's my catcher. Actually, no. I have it hidden right now. Let me do that. He's my catcher two right now. So I'm a big fan of Rice in my rankings. I have him ranked comparably to his ADP. I am 56 overall. He's 54th last in December. But there's definitely going to be a time in one of my DCs where I do want to have Rice on my team because he's going to give you probably production comparable. If you're talking first baseman only, he's probably going to be like a Vinny Pasquantino probably in terms of expected production. Probably more runs, maybe not as many RBIs, but similar homers, probably similar average. But you're getting a catcher, so that's why you get the ADP boost and you're like 50 picks higher than Vinny P or 40 picks higher, whatever it is. So, and I have no platoon worries with Rice. He did well enough versus lefties last year. The K rate may have been high. I heard someone cite that, but the production ultimately was pretty good versus lefties. And he's their first baseman. And Rosario, who they just signed, is going to play third base or probably with McMahon. And there's no one else who would really take spots like PT from Rice. And the only risk could be if they re-sign Bellinger, but I don't, the way things are looking right now, I don't know that's going to happen, unfortunately. So Rice, It's a hefty price, but at least he's not playing catcher and he has the eligibility. Like I was in on Dalton Varsho when he was catcher eligible that last season and he went like 20-20 and it helped me that year. Different players, but same kind of idea. So you get a nice value boost with Rice. And I think I wouldn't do it every time taking him that early, but I would definitely want a piece or two of that Ben Rice pie this year.
Yep. He's my third catcher as well. And this does get released on January 1st. So the Bubba and the Bloom draft kit is out. And there's cumulative rankings between myself, Ryan, and Martin Sokolsky. And combined, we have him at 3.3 at the catcher's position because there's one guy, I won't mention him, my co-host, has him as the fourth catcher off the board. But yeah,
I'm going to scold Ryan.
There's a beauty and a madness to why we think so different at times. It actually is the reason it works. So I let it go. If you think that one that needs to get scolded, like we have some very deep differences at some other positions that are quite interesting. But
I'll say because of the age, probably that's why Rice is too young for Ryan.
Rice is way too young. Way too young. Like Ryan doesn't even know what Ice Baby is, and just he just turns it off, thinking, "Who is this? What is this trash? These kids." So yeah, it's Ben Rice though. Love it. You mentioned Bellinger, and I know that's a dream that some Yankees fans have, and Trent Grisham might have ruined that dream by picking up his option. Which kudos to him, he got his money, he got what he wanted. He could have went and tried to get more years, I guess, but maybe the AAV wouldn't be there. Grisham's only 29 this year, which shocked many of us when we talked about him last year at 28. But he's coming off a great year, 34 homers, hit .235, 143 games, just like career highs across the board, and the powers, the runs, the ribbies, you name it, he did it. When it comes to Grisham right now, his ADP is 260 over the last 7 days. I have a really hard time drafting him, even though his ADP isn't that high, because I just don't know if I can trust it again, even though I probably should at that price.
Yeah, I think it's an okay price. He's been hanging out in my DC, Grisham. I think I'm in like the 18th round, so there's a chance he may come back to me as an option if I want to go with the outfielder route. But the way I have things ranked now, I haven't ranked ahead of ADP, Grisham. And so in my process, what I do is I look free of ADP and projections when I do my initial player position rankings. And if you look at Grisham's underlying metrics or the things that I look at, he's a ton of green. There's nothing that's red in his profile amongst like the dozen or so hitting categories that I look at. And there's a lot of dark green. Like he really improved as a hitter. And I think we covered Grisham in one of our projection review pods, and he looked pretty good in terms of his limited projection sample going into last year, this in 2025. And we were saying that if you looked at Seamer 600, he probably would have popped as a pretty good value. And his underlying metrics in 2024, Grisham's were really good as well, but he didn't have a guaranteed position because they had so many outfielders, the Yankees, going into this past season. And Grisham had been so bad the last few years with the service stats that you didn't think anything of it. But his barrel rate in 2025 was 14%. His exit velocity was over 91 miles per hour. is that he had an X-Log over 500. I could just keep going on with all these different stats for Grisham that kind of justified what he did. He did slow down in the second half a little bit, but I think as long as he keeps these skills, I think he's really worth it, especially at 260. I haven't ranked more closer to like 200 just based on what I thought with the other outfielders. And like, he's going to hit off, lead off Grisham. So that's a huge boost, especially in that point in the draft, especially in like a draft and hold or a 15 teamer where you getting that playing time is harder to find. And this going back, so I think he's a solid pick for fantasy. I wouldn't like take him in every draft, Grisham. I think there's a chance he kind of regresses a lot back to how he has been playing, but if he keeps these skills up, he would be worthy of being picked earlier in my mind. But yeah, going back to the qualifying offer, that's really annoyed me. I don't know what Cashman was thinking by doing that. They probably thought they could get a pick for whatever reason, like Grisham's going to be like Kyle Tucker on the market, which he isn't, obviously. And I think they kind of ruined their chances of actually getting Bellinger because of that. So that's a frustrated Yankee rant right there.
Yeah, I get it. Weirdly enough, he's the 63rd outfielder off the boards this December 1st. And I have him ranked at 63. And that's interesting to see that actually lined up in that one. All right, let's talk about another Yankees outfielder that, when healthy, is actually pretty darn good. But that when healthy is a big all caps when healthy, and that's Giancarlo Stanton, who obviously is the projected DH, but actually had to play some outfield at times last year, but only played 77 games. He hasn't played more than 114 games in the last four seasons. He's only played 139 games once in like the last seven seasons. It's been brutal, but the small sample is where I'm going with this. 77 games, still hit 24 home runs and hit 273. Strikes out a ton, Ben. But where are you at on a guy like Stanton? Because like, I look at him in a DC going, okay, I can get depth, play him the half to two-thirds of the year when he's healthy and just rake in stats. His ADP is 266 over the last 7 days. What do you have on Stanton?
Kind of a miracle that he's outfield eligible now, because he had to play a lot with Judge hurt last year, actually. So it kind of helped out Stanton for the upcoming season. And
that's why it kind of intrigues me a little bit. I'm like, okay, this is interesting.
Yeah, definitely why he's going higher than he was. Well, also last year, too, he was starting out with a dual tennis elbow somehow, benching too much probably. But kind of going the same lines with Grisham, tons of dark green on my sheet for Stanton. Of course, the only two red categories that I classify that way are his contact rate and his K rate. But we know Stanton has a massive swing, and he's going to miss a lot. But when he does connect, it's like Judge quality of contact. And he also is someone who pops on Steamer 600. I incorporated that into my sheet this year after we discussed it post the projection review shows. Stanton actually gets a boost of 97 hitter spots using my Z scores if you use Steamer 600 versus the Fangraphs depth charts Steamer projections. So that's a massive gain, and that's mainly because, like you mentioned, the lack of playing time going into the last few seasons. And I think in a DC, it makes a lot more sense to take Stanton because you're going to have that bench. Hopefully you draft enough backup outfielders or just hitters if Stanton's your utility by chance. He's your outfield six, where you can hopefully plug in when he's sitting or injured or whatever. But on a per plate appearance rate, Stanton's as good of a power hitter as anyone. So even at age 36, which he's about to be, which is kind of crazy that he's that old already. So in a DC, I think it's kind of worth a stab, but in a fab league where you don't have IL like an NFBC, it'd be tough to do that unless you're desperate for power at that point in the draft. But if he does get hurt, it's not the worst cut if you have to cut him. And hopefully he stays healthy long enough where he's pretty productive in your lineup.
Yeah, I remember in some fab leagues last year, I picked him up off the wire. And man, those weeks it got to the point, I think we talk about it, you knew he was going to sit. Like the way they were playing him, he couldn't play outfield every day. So he'd sit like half the week, but the other half the week he played were still so good, it was hard to sit him. Like he was just mashing baseballs last year. So that's why I think in a DC, I'm really interested in it. Not sure so much in fab to your point, but again, I'm not super opposed to it. Like if he starts the year healthy, which again, it's only January 1st right now, long ways to go for that to come to fruition. It's interesting. It's at least a point of like talk. I can't wait to see what his auction value starts going at. Like if you get like a $2, $3, $4 Stanton, that'd be awesome. Doubt you will, but that'd be pretty sweet. I'd be very inclined to try something like that. All right, the newly engaged Jazz Chisholm Jr. just took Twitter by storm with his OnlyFans, or maybe not OnlyFans, I don't know, fiance. It was really good stuff all over there a couple days ago. Jazz Chisholm is coming in at the second base position for the New York Yankees. 31 homers, 31 steals last year, hit 242, 130 games for the second straight season, at least 130 games. But you got to pay for Jazz, ADP 22.5. So he's a mid-second round pick right now in DC's. I love Jazz. He's proven he can do it back-to-back years. The ballpark's perfect, Ben. Are we buying Jazz, or are there still concerns there?
I'm definitely a fan of Jazz. Yeah, I actually have him a few spots ahead of AAV in my overall rankings. I have him like hitter 20 right now. The second, third eligibility is so huge, especially that early in the draft for a hitter as good as Jazz is. And I think when we talked about him at the end of the season, we were saying that he probably would have paced out for 40-40 based on the time he missed. Of course, you can't expect that to happen when he missed like 40 games or whatever Jazz missed, maybe 30 games. But it was close. He was 30-30 and... I think he had a huge spike in his barrel rate. It was up to 15% last year. The XBA is not very good, 246. He struck out a lot, almost 28%. Not the best contact rate either. It's below 70% overall. And he's definitely selling out more for power now that he's in Yankee Stadium. I believe his fly ball rate spiked a lot last year, Jazz's. Let's see. Yeah, it went up. So, yeah, so this is all you have to know. So previous two seasons, 2023, 2024, he was 35% fly ball rate. Last year in 2025 went to 47.6. So he made a point to hit it in the air more, try to pull it into the short porch in Yankee Stadium. And it worked. But of course, his average was his lowest since 2021. So, I mean, he's always around 250, Jazz. But if you kind of want him above 250 at least, because then he's not really hurting you as much. But when you're closer to 240, and with the amount of play like at bats he'll get, because he doesn't really walk a ton. I don't believe that. Actually, no, he walked 10% of the time, which is actually pretty impressive. So that'll help the steals totals. And actually, it lessens the damage that the average will do, because if you're walking more often, that's fewer at-bats. So that's big of an impact on your team's average. So that's a positive. 2 years of 130-plus games, kind of a low bar. But for Jazz, it's definitely an improvement compared to how he was a couple years ago in Miami. So I think... He, if you were to take Judge, well, actually, no, it's a different part of the draft. So if you were to take, I don't know, maybe a starter, Skeens or Skubal in the first round, and you kind of have to make up for in like all the hitting categories, maybe you take Jazz and go for a guy, someone with a good average. Cause with Jazz, you're getting tons of runs and tons of RBIs, runs, homers, steals, and the average is in question, but it's not going to kill you. It's kind of like with Ellie, I think. It's kind of, Ellie kind of batting average, and Jazz has more power, it seems like, right now. And he's going later, multi-position eligibility. So I think he's a pretty good pick.
Yeah, I don't have any Jazz yet. I keep looking at him, and I want to take him, but I usually end up taking, like, Pete Alonso or something around that time for all the power. But I should probably be more inclined to it, because his average isn't crushing you in the power speed. Like, he could go 40-40. Like, there's a world where that happens. I don't know if he can't, if he will, but even if he goes 30-40, I could definitely see that happening. So, yeah, like some Jazz, need to probably, you know, buy into it a little more. All right, the conundrum that everybody listening to this show wants to know about this, and you're purely speculating. I'm going to preface that right out the gate. But the Martian, Jason Dominguez, I think so many of us want him to be great. The Yankees, maybe not so much, but we do. In the fantasy world, the hype train was real, but last year's couldn't get consistent playing time. He had some, you know, horrific splits, as you'll probably tell us. ADP's 197 over the last 7 days. I have not drafted him at all, and I love the skill set of Jason Dominguez, but I just have no confidence in the Yankees at all.
Well, see, it really comes down to if they sign anybody else. That's really going to affect Dominguez, because last year he got pushed out by Grisham, which at the time, I was like, what are they doing playing Grisham? But he just kept hitting homers, and I'm like, okay, whatever. If he's going to hit homers, Grisham, might as well keep playing him. But Dominguez has been their top prospect for so many years now. And well, now he's no longer a prospect, but until he got called up, he was signed at 16. I think that's when he got the nickname the Martian, and he's been a Yankee favorite, Yankee fan favorite for so many years now. And I don't know if it's Boone who's really doing it, or if it's Cashman, a combination, but the lack of consistent playing time this past year was just killer for him. And I don't get how you can expect a young player. He's only 22. I don't get how you expect a 22-year-old to succeed in the majors when he's not in the lineup every day and not always facing lefties. Or it was just a mess. And yeah, to your point, the big question with Dominguez, besides playing time, is what's going to happen versus lefties? Is he going to give up switch hitting? Because versus righties, his OPS in 2020, actually, first, I'll go with the career. So for the career's OPS versus righties is 793, 532 versus lefties. So as a right-handed hitter, he's pretty horrible. But at the same time, I've been looking at percentage of plate appearances versus righties as a whole to kind of the gauge versus roster resource if I think a player will be in a platoon or not. And Dominguez was below my threshold. So he had 75.8% of his plate appearances against right-handed pitching, which is, in my eyes, worthy of being a full-time player. But I don't know if you want Dominguez to face lefties if his OPS is that low, because his average is terrible too for fantasy and doesn't really do anything versus them. But maybe if he hits them as a left, if he faces them as a left-handed batter, he might be better. It can't be any worse, really. So it's a matter of, does he continue to switch hit, and do they even let him face lefties? And then if the Yankees do sign Bellinger, then I think Dominguez could be looking at reduced playing time again, or I don't know what would happen. But so it's tough. And one thing though too that I've noticed looking at projections now is that he's the 81st hitter, Dominguez, per the Fangraphs depth chart projections, which is Steamer with the roster resource playing time. And he's like almost 2020 in the projections, Dominguez, which is kind of what he was last year. But despite how poorly last year went for Dominguez, they still have confidence in him as being a pretty good bat. And at his ADP, I'll want to take a chance. The only thing though that I was hopeful for last year was he could maybe hit high in the lineup, because the leadoff spot was kind of, there wasn't anyone who was obviously going to take it. Now they have Grisham there, so Dominguez will probably hit six, which is where he's projected per roster resource, which isn't the worst thing at that point in the draft. But if you get extra plate appearances, that would be awesome, of course. But I think he's as talented of a young player as in baseball, probably. It's just a matter of the playing time. And if the status quo remains, I think he'll play mostly every day, Dominguez. It's just a matter of what's it like versus lefties. And I don't know. And the power kind of fell off a little bit. His barrel rate was only 7%, which was a little concerning. The hard hit was still there, but I think it could be like a ground ball, fly ball issue. But he's super young still, Dominguez, and I think if he gets reps, he could just grow into being a really good player.
Yeah, if he gets reps, I'm in. So maybe I should be a little more optimistic in these drafting holds. I'm terrified of them screwing this up again with Dominguez, and that's keeping me off, because I was all in last year, and so I probably shouldn't be out just yet. But that's my stubbornness taking place on this one. So we'll see. I'm rooting for him. I hope it works out. Because I'll probably see spring training, and I'll probably start taking some fab shares, and then it'll backfire. But we'll see how that one plays out. Ryan McMahon, it looks like he's entering the season as the team's third baseman, maybe in a platoon, but at least the starting third baseman for now. Between the Rockies and the Yankees last year, McMahon played 154 games and hit 20 home runs for the sixth straight non-COVID season. He had at least 20 home runs. Average fell to 214, though. That used to be like a steady 240 to 250. Everything else pretty close to what we've seen from Ryan McMahon for the most part throughout his career, except the strikeout rate, I guess. But when you look at Ryan McMahon, his ADP is 402 over the last 7 days, Ben. I haven't even thought about clicking that button. Where are you at on Ryan McMahon?
I'm kind of surprised that it's that low. Everyone is thinking that now that he's out of Coors, he's kind of useless, McMahon. It's definitely a benefit because he doesn't have to deal with the Coors hangover effect from going from Coors to wherever they're on the road and kind of having to readjust to more movement on the pitches. But yeah, we were talking about the platooning with Dominguez, and McMahon is certainly going to be in a platoon now that they've re-signed Ahmed Rosario. So Rosario will be playing third base, I'm fairly confident, versus left-handed pitching, and McMahon will sit. But at this point in the draft, 400, that's a pretty good spot for a corner infielder, especially where third base is. I haven't gotten all the way through the draft yet in my current draft to actually see how poorly it is, but I know people have said previously on podcasts I listened to that third base is kind of a tough position to draft for. And if you're getting McMahon that late in a DC especially, I think it's a pretty good value, even if he's platooning, because he's going to hit kind of in the middle of the lineup for the Yankees, probably hit seventh. He still had 20 homers last year. What's his underlying metrics look like? His XBA was 230, so he probably got a little unlucky there. The K rate really spiked up. I mean, he always had a high K rate, McMahon, but Coors kind of massed it with the BABIP, so it's understandable. But if he could hit 25 homers, I think he's definitely worth that price. And I don't think anyone else – I guess there were rumors of maybe Suarez would sign with the Yankees, but I don't think they would do that. They already like McMahon's defense, and that's kind of why they wanted to get him last year too. But the one thing though too is that Cashman has said they're very left-handed heavy right now in the Yankees. So if they maybe wanted Suarez, it would make sense. Then maybe they deal McMahon. I don't know. But at this point in time, if everything stays the way it is, I think McMahon's a pretty good buy at that point in the draft.
Yeah, if they go out and get a third baseman, you got to get rid of McMahon. You can't just keep him there on the bench. That seems pretty counterproductive to what's going on. You mentioned Amed Rosario. Let's just get to him real quick. You added him to the bottom because he seems like the perfect platoon partner with McMahon. We know Rosario can play all over the diamond, including the outfield. So he can platoon all over the place. He could legit platoon with Jason Dominguez if they want to get dumb in New York. Rosario's got an ADP of 659 over the last 7 days. What were your thoughts on Amed Rosario?
Looking at the depth chart, he's probably the first man up if there's an injury. I like him better than Oswaldo Cabrera, people liked him a couple years ago in drafts, but he's just a backup utility player, Cabrera. So Rosario is probably the best hitting bench player they have right now, which is kind of bad when you say that. But I mentioned the Steamer 600 earlier, and Rosario is someone who is also pops a lot. So with the current playing time situation of depth charts, he's the 310th hitter. Rosario, but then when you look at Steamer 600, he moves up 160 spots. So the way I have it on my sheet is like how much the players change. So he's a top 150 hitter, I think, if he gets 600 plate appearances. Rosario, that's a huge boost. And a lot of it's driven by his hard hit, his XBA. He doesn't really strike out a lot. Rosario, he used to have speed. I don't know how the steals are now, but he's a great. Unfortunately, he only has third base eligibility now. I think last year he had second, third outfield, which made him a lot more appealing. But at 600, whatever it was, 650, I think you mentioned that range, I think that's a pretty good dart throw in a DC, especially since, like, you know, and if they're facing two or three lefties, the Yankees, he's going to play two games. He could even pinch hit for McMahon late in the game when the righty starts. So Rosario will definitely be on the field a lot. And he also could just give guys a rest, because if they want to give Jazz a day off, he could play second. If they want to give someone in the outfield a day off, he could play the outfield as well. So there's a lot of spots for Rosario to play, just maybe four times a week if he's not a full-time starter. So I think at that point in a DC, he's a great pick.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense because he is that Swiss Army knife for the team. They have another Swiss Army knife that looks like to be the starting shortstop for at least a month or so with the Yankees. That's Jose Caballero. And the fact he's going to be starting plus his second base shortstop, third base eligibility, has him with an ADP of 220 over the last 7 days, which is rich. But it's a guy that 126 games last year had 49 steals, 139 games the year before had 44 steals. Doesn't really hit for average, doesn't do much anything else, but steals like crazy, Ben, and plays all over the diamond. In a fab league, I have a tough time doing that unless you know for a fact you're going to drop him and have a backup plan. In a DC, I get it. So what are your thoughts on this Caballero situation? And heck, we'll mention Volpe here in a minute, but maybe it's worse than we thought and Caballero sticks around longer. Who knows?
Yeah, this I can't get behind his ADP. I have Caballero ranked in the 330s for my own rankings. Because I just see it as a temporary stopgap until Volpe comes back. Cashman's gone out and said how much the team likes Volpe, to the dismay of many New Yorkers who like the Yankees. I will always send a Instagram meme making fun of Volpe whenever I can into the Discord. But with Caballero, I think a lot of it is like, okay, we're doing DCs right now. He has four position eligibility, which is massive. He steals a ton of bases, but I don't know what happens when Volpe gets back. I was talking about Rosario platooning with McMahon. Maybe Caballero becomes a platoon partner with Dominguez. I don't know what happens. Maybe he just stays as a platoon partner with McMahon instead of Rosario. I don't know what happens when Volpe gets back. I think the timeline for Volpe is late April, early May, but there's always setbacks potentially with these injuries. And it was his lead shoulder, I believe, his left shoulder, Volpe. So that's tough when you're hitting, trying to hit if that shoulder's not perfect. So maybe Caballero gets more run, but I don't know. It's just a pretty hefty price for me to pay despite the steals and the eligibility in DCs. I would have to take Caballero post pick 300.
Yeah, I'm with you. I can't pay that price. I have not paid that price. Like, I get it for those that want their steals and everything, but at 220, I think I'm passing up on so many other things on my roster besides just targeting steals. At least, you know, if you target Chandler Simpson, he gets you batting average. Like, there's not a lot coming on with Caballero outside of the steals. So, yeah, I have not been at that point yet in drafts. Let's talk about the catcher for the Yankees, since Ben Rice is at first base now, and that is Austin Wells. And, you know, the average isn't sexy. It's been 229, 229, 219. Dude hit 21 jacks last year. Looked really good in that regard. If, like, you, if you can stomach the batting average, which most catcher twos are going to have to, you get a nice power source at catcher two, which has been my selling point so far. ADP's 215 over the last 7 days, which is also a later pick for a catcher two, which is nice. But there are, again, concerns. What's your thoughts on Austin Wells?
I'm a fan. I have him as my 20th catcher overall. I'm not sure how that corresponds with the ADP right now. But one thing that kind of probably goes under the radar with Wells is that he had 71 RBIs last year, and he hit ninth a lot. Also, I kind of fell victim to the idea that he was going to hit leadoff for the Yankees, because I think he did that a couple times in spring training. Then Roster Resource made the change. And like I said, with Grisham before, there was, and I think even Dominguez, there wasn't really a set leadoff hitter going into the season for the Yankees, which has kind of been a theme the last few years. And I thought, well, if they're putting Wells leadoff, and then catcher kind of dropped off going into 2025, that's when he was getting drafted. Like, okay, well, he could be a massive playing time monster and just kind of really outproduce his draft costs. But things happened and he went down to the bottom lineup Wells. So he's like hitting ninth, which is going to hurt. He's not really platooning though, because their backup JC Ascara is also left-handed. So it's just Wells will face lefties, which you could argue is maybe a bad thing considering how bad his average is already. But yeah, like he played versus the last two to end the season. Actually, I think that one maybe in a playoff game. Yeah, Wells actually had a lot of days off versus righties end of the year too, not necessarily lefties. So yeah, to my point, he's going to play mostly versus anyone who's out there. And the average, yeah, so with fewer at-bats, the average won't hurt as much with him. But if you can get 50-plus runs, 20 homers as a floor roughly, and then 60-plus RBIs, it's fine. I think I have him kind of ranked around the Stevenson range. I view him... And yeah, I have like Ohapi, Wells, Stevenson in the same kind of range. They all have high K rates, low average, at least they did last year. So I value him with those three catchers, or those other two catchers, Wells. But yeah, I think he's a solid catcher too. I would not want him as my catcher one though. Make sure you have someone else before you take Wells.
Yeah, I have him at 22. I have him right behind. I have Stevenson, Ohapi, JTR, and Wells. So. We're in the same ballpark of what we got going there. So, yep, I'm with you as well. Like, I like the appeal. Like, if you wait on catchers or you miss on catchers, it's a good fallback to have. Do I love going there knowing I have a guy that could easily hit 200? No, but you know, if he still gets the 20 homers and the 70 steals, you live with it type situation. And as I've always said, 15s are different, 12s for sure. Your catcher too, you can basically rotate it around. So if somehow things don't work out for Wells, there will be options at some point too. Heck, you did it in a 15 last year and you made it work. So there's ways around it. All right, let's talk about him. Anthony Volpe. I know you said Yankee fans aren't a fan. I'm a fan, but I'm not a Yankees fan. So we'll start breaking this down. He's got the shoulder injury. They say, I believe he'll be back in May. I keep saying it sounds like the Zach Neto deal, and he ended up coming back earlier than expected. Volpe's ADP is 330 over the last 7 days. This is a guy that, even though he hit 212 last year, 19 homers, 18 steals, nearly went 20-20. I've discussed in length in articles and other things, his underlying, there's so many factors to him that I'm still a fan of. So before I say too much more, what are your thoughts on Volpe this year? Especially if we're missing a month, it's still a pretty decent price, I think.
So I'm trying to think of why I hate him so much. Or I dislike him. I won't say hate him, but dislike him. I kind of remember, like, I kind of forget what actually triggered the initial dislike. It can't just be all the fielding errors, but I think when he comes down to watching Volpe play every day, he's not the best hitter, and which is fine if in fantasy, but the average can be a crusher. And I think a lot of it stemmed too, though, was like going into last year and even the year before, his price was way too high in drafts for me. I haven't drafted a Volpe anywhere ever. Only been a couple years since he's been in the majors, but I've had a lot of teams and I haven't drafted him yet just because of the average. And he's kind of had like a little bit of a ping pong effect with his power and his K rate. So Volpe's first season, he had a 9% barrel rate and his K rate was 27.8%. So he hit a pretty good amount of home runs that year. He had 21 homers in his rookie year, got everybody excited. He went 20-20, but he hit 209. And then the K rate was really high. So going into 2024, he's like, okay, I'm going to make more contact, get the average up. For him, that's cutting the barrel rate in more than half. The barrel rate went from 9 to 3.9. His K rate did drop though from 28 to 22.5, but the average only went up to 243, which isn't as bad. But when you go from 2020 to 1230-ish to 40, which one do you prefer? Maybe the second year. But then this past season, 2025, the barrel rate shot back up to 10.5%, which is a career high, and that's a very good barrel rate. I'll give you that, Bubba. And the K rate was 25%. So not as bad as his rookie year, but definitely a step back from 2024. And then the XBA was still 225 for him in 2025, Volpe, which I've said this before on the show. I probably put a little bit more into XBA than others like to. I think that the math behind it makes sense, and it's trying to estimate kind of like what BABIP does, but in a different, more direct way. And I think it's telling when your XBA is that low. The sprint speed for Volpe is 76th percentile, which is good, but it's not great. He still hasn't hit 30 steals yet. You feel like with his speed, he would by now. And also his career OBP is 283. So that's another red flag in his cap. For me, his OPS for his career is 662. So he's if you're talking real life and he's making all these errors now, he's just not a good baseball player currently. And he's only 24. So Volpe could improve, but we haven't really seen that growth yet. Except for the barrel rate, to your point. And then on my sheet, there's not a lot of red for Volpe for 2025, which is actually the only thing that's red is his pull aired rate, and it's 13%, which is okay. Not the best. So he has grown a little bit over the last couple of years, Volpe, but it's kind of been like a roller coaster. Like he'll make a gain somewhere, then it dips back down, something else goes up, something else goes back down. And I think with the shoulder injury, it might not click this year. So I'm usually hesitant to draft players who are already hurt, especially pitchers now. I'm not sure if I would take Volpe in a DC, maybe once. In my current DC, I need a shortstop still, so maybe I have to consider that. But I need to see it with him before I actually buy in.
So you're saying there's a chance. That's what I'm hearing through all that, which is great.
I did tell you this, though. This is not really relevant for fantasy, but I did make a trade in a sim league where I did acquire Volpe last month, and I did tell you about that. But
yes, you did. Yes.
There's no money involved with that, so that's why I did it.
I'm just optimistic. It's a guy that played hurt, but we still saw like shifts in like some positive gains from the previous season, which I like to see. Still nearly went 20-20, which was a big plus to me. Not 25% K rate, I can live with that in this era of baseball. He's not like he's going crazy. He's still super young. I'm just trying to find all the optimistic parts, and it's like, we were always mad at Trevor Story because he couldn't hit for average and struck out a ton, and look what he just did. Like, why can't he be that guy at 330? Like, I'm just trying to like find. I'm looking at the positives, and I understand why everyone wants the negatives. I'm looking at the ADP and what could be of 5 months of Anthony Volpe. So, I'm optimistic. I guess I'm also not a Yankees fan, and I don't watch him every day, so I get it. Like, if we talked to the Giants, I probably wouldn't be as optimistic about certain players. But I'm very, very intrigued. I think he's close to figuring it out, but we'll see. Maybe he won't. Maybe he never will. Time will tell. It just reminds me of, for years, Willie Adames with the Rays. Is always like, why isn't he doing it? And he's like, he's still so young. Just like, give him a second. Give him some time. But we'll see.
Are you saying Volpe can't see in Yankee Stadium? That was the Adames thing. He couldn't see in the trap.
That was the Adames thing. But I think it's more so Volpe just can't throw at Yankee Stadium. I don't know. I'm trying to twist it to his defense, messing up his offense. But any other bats you like to, or you got more on Volpe? I could talk Volpe all day. I know what you like him.
The throws made a great joke about him and his girlfriend, though. If anyone listening knows, I'm not going to say it, but it was, you remember the joke?
Wait, who said it?
Someone said it online about him throwing his girlfriend onto the bed, but instead she went somewhere else. It was making fun of him.
She went through the wall or something like
that. Yeah, so she hit the dresser or something.
Yeah.
He can't throw the ball to first base. He can't
hit his target.
He's giving us those gems. Yeah, he can't hit his target now. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's good. He's good. I get it. Hey, that's the dumb humor I love. All right, any other bats before we head to the mound?
No, I mentioned Cabrera. Yeah, don't draft Cabrera as well as Cabrera. And there's no one else on the roster right now, but there's a couple of hitters that we'll talk about prospect wise. That's it.
All right, let's head to the bump. Let's talk Max Fried. Max Fried, 195 innings pitched last year, his first season in the Bronx. People were kind of quasi concerned. He's had like minor forearm issues and stuff, and he pitches through them. Great year, 2.86 ERA, 19 wins. I believe that led baseball. The accumulation of innings were tremendous for him. I get so worried about him. I know I shouldn't. He's done it time and time again. I used to be a huge Fried fan. I guess it was also when he was cheaper. Now, if you look at Max Fried over the last 7 days, his ADP is about 60, give or take. So on the 3-4 turn, or no, the 4-5 turn, sorry. Where are you at on Max Fried? I guess 4-5 turn isn't bad, actually, in a 15.
No, it's not. It's a pretty decent price. It's a little bit lower than I think last year, maybe. Or actually, no, I think he dropped a lot last year, Fried did. I forget what the concern was. Maybe it was the forearm.
There was forearm concerns. Yeah.
And looking at his year-to-year stats, so Fried actually had a career-high innings last year, 195 in the third, beat his previous career high by 10, which was 2022. And he also had his highest average fastball velocity. So he went from 94.2 miles per hour in 2024 to 95.8 per Fangraphs. So when you have a forearm concern going into the season, then you gain a mile and a half of velocity in your fastball, that's kind of concerning as well, especially with the career-high in innings on top of it. But I have Fried as my SP20 right now. I didn't take him in the first DC I did. I went with some more – I took other riskier arms probably for my first two starting pitchers. But I've always been a Fried fan when he was on the Braves. I drafted him for years on end, multiple teams. And the only thing with me, too, like concerning-wise, is the Ks are probably going downhill for him. His swing strike's only 11.3% in 2025. It's not really been that high, though. Looking at what the previous – in 2024, it was 10.2. So that got me kind of scared off going into 2025. But he gained a point back kind of in line with his career norms. So that's good to see. I think he's a pretty good – actually, he kind of lost his ground ball 10. Actually, no. So he went from 58% ground ball rate to 52.4, which is still really good, but that's a pretty big drop. Not what you want to see in Yankee Stadium. But he's lefty, so the short portion left, it shouldn't really be an issue for Fried. So it's just a matter of if you trust the workload and – he should be good for at least 15 wins, probably, assuming a full season of health for Fried. And the ERA is always good. It was sub 3, even though the indicators are kind of in line with that, so that's good. And the WHIP was 110. So he's a great SP2, I think. It's just I wouldn't take him too much because there's that chance because of the forearm and the overuse. But like I said, but I've said this previously, like you can't really – everyone can get injured as a pitcher, so I wouldn't really hold it against Fried at this point probably.
Yeah, for my thing with Fried, it's like he has to be an SP2 for me. So you have to have an aggressive early pitching approach, which some guys do. Everyone that listens to this show should know I usually don't. Like I'm not saying I won't, because I just draft so many that I will mix it up, but I can't take him as my SP1. And Ben, you've been around with me long enough. By the 4 or 5 turns, there's a lot of times I don't even have an SP1 yet. So like that's just not a guy I'm going to battle with, if that makes sense. There's a reason I get stuck with Dylan Cease, because at least with Cease, he has the potential for ratios to blow you up or to be successful, but he also has the strikeouts. For Fried, he has to accumulate innings to get the strikeouts. That's the difference for me with Fried. Fried, I think, is a great pitcher. Ratios are amazing, probably something I should probably draft him for with my history, but it's more like he has to accumulate base. Like early in his career, he struck out more often. It's been dwindling, as you mentioned. So it's like, that's what keeps me off of him. I should probably be more interested in Fried, but he has to be an SP2. And the way I draft, it doesn't happen for me. Now, Schlitt happens, and you'll laugh if you look at the outline. I totally spelt it the wrong way because it was a Freudian slip, I think. But I forgot the L with Schittler.
I didn't know that.
I figured it out right now trying to search for him in the ADP tracker. This is how the running joke continues. In the rookie season for Cam, pretty solid stuff. 73 innings with the Yankees, about 150 innings overall between the minors and the bigs. Sub 3 ERA. Strikeouts were very good at 28%, but also a 10% walk rate. Concerning ups and downs, which you kind of expect from a rookie, Ben. ADP is 135, though. That's the difference. You still have to pay for him if you want to draft him right now, and that's where I struggle with him and so many other rookies.
Yeah, it's a pretty hefty price. There's a lot of rookies going in that range, I realized, doing my first draft. I have him at 126 in my overall rankings, Schlittler, pitcher 34, or SP34, which I think is fair. The swing strike rate for him was actually below Fried's, so take that for what you will, 11.1% versus Fried's 11.3. Despite having the 10.2 walk rate for Schlittler, he only had a 34% ball rate, which you love to see. That's I remember the one game versus the Jays, because I had Schuldler in one of my main events, and I was just cringing because A, of the Yankees losing to the Jays, and also Schuldler like not getting out of the second inning. They were firing off pitches left and right, and this driving up the walks and the pitch count. And when you only have 15 starts like Schuldler did, it's going to affect your ratio. So I think a couple rough outings like that kind of hurt the walk rate for him. But looking at his rolling graphs on FanGraphs, his xFIP was at one point, like the rolling xFIP was down to like almost three. By the end of the year, it was up back up to like four. But the K rate was hovering around 28%+, which is awesome. The swing strike was kind of supporting at one point, then it kind of dipped a little bit. His last five games, he averaged 9.9%, which isn't the best, but with him, he's very fastball heavy, and he's. I heard him talk about this too on a Yankees show, that he's trying to develop like a splitter or a changeup, something just to get people off the fastball and the cutter. And if he's able to do that, Schuldler will hopefully keep that K rate. Otherwise, people might kind of, once they see him a couple times, they'll be sitting on the fastball, and he throws it high a lot too. He doesn't throw it low in the zone, so it's easy to let it go, and that could have affected the walk rate as well. I think that happened in the 1G start that I'm thinking of. And I don't know. He also had a huge jump in velocity from the minors, and that's kind of what led to his success early on last year. And like I said, with Freed, though, too, you can't really expect an injury for any pitcher or any pitcher to be safe. But when you're throwing like 99 consistently, like Schuldler was this past year in the majors, it's kind of concerning when he hadn't done it before in his career. So I like him. I hope he's going to stay healthy for the Yankees' sake. I'll try to graft him at some point, but I don't know if he's like necessarily should be going at this point, but I think it's a okay price, and who knows, he's young, so he hasn't gotten hurt yet. I don't think there's that in his cap, but maybe you want a pitcher who's already been hurt, and then the UCL's repaired, who knows. But what he showed us at the end of the season, especially in the playoffs, I wouldn't guarantee to see that all the time going into the season, unless he makes a change, like I said, with another pitch or something.
Yeah, that's why I like the skills. The inconsistency concerns me at pick 135. It makes it very tricky for me to do it. I think he could be very good, but like I talked with with Joe with the Jays, like Yasavage, Burns, Mizorowski, Schuldler, all these guys, that it's going to be a lot of ups and downs. I think it's going to be a roller coaster ride, and a lot of them have whip issues. And I, you know me, I'm going to find whip issues. I don't need to find them in the top 150. Like that's a big thing. Like Cease will be my whip issue at the top 150. Let's not go past that. All right, let's talk about Luis Eel, the guy that missed part of last season due to injuries. Only made 11 starts, 57 innings. Strikeouts were non-existent last year, which is a massive concern to me. ADP's 357. I honestly don't know if he's long for the rotation once a couple arms come back or some come up. Who knows? But Luis Eel, I have not come close to drafting him yet.
No, that's a pretty high ADP. It's still definitely lower from last year's, but I have Eel as my overall player 523. I was looking at underlying numbers and like this, not even looking at the surface stats. And Eel's swing strike was less than 9% last year, and his K minus walk is 3.3%. His Sierra XFIP were over 5.5. His O swing was, he was getting zero chases. His ball rate was almost 40%. His xERA was 4.78. It was just horrible. And he always had a bad walk rate heel. So that's why he was kind of risky going into last year, despite the injury that he had. And he's a fly ball pitcher, which is not good in Yankee Stadium. So if you're going to walk a ton of guys and give a lot of fly balls, that's a disaster waiting to happen. And I know he won the Rookie of the Year 2 years ago, but he started out really hot that year. Then he kind of really fell off, but the numbers were just good enough by the end of the season. That's why he won it. So yeah, I will not be drafting Eel anytime soon. Unfortunately.
Yep. I don't blame you at all. Another guy that I'm kind of torn on is Will Warren, a guy that made 33 starts last year, which might surprise many people. He was in the rotation the whole run due to injuries. He has kept sticking and sticking and sticking. Made 162 innings pitched, 4.44 ERA. A lot of highs and lows with Warren. There's a stretch where he's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. Then another stretch where you're wondering how he was in baseball. It was a roller coaster of emotions with Will Warren. And right now he's in the rotation, ADP of 324 over the last 7 days. Like, I would prefer him over Luis Eel. Not overly confident in either one, but I like Warren a lot more.
Right. Yeah. I have Warren right in that range. I'm at 322, so 200 spots ahead of Eel. when you look at the underlying numbers for Warren on the season, they're not terrible. The really the worst thing is the swinging strike was like 9.5%, which you can get by with it, I guess, at that point in the draft. You're not expecting a great thing from Will Warren. But also the exit velocity gets was kind of high, 91 miles per hour. His hard hit was 52%. Ball rate was kind of high too, 38%. So getting definitely above average and getting close to that 40%, which you don't want to be near. His K minus walk Warren was 14.9, which is about average. So that's good to see. But when I was digging into him, doing my rankings, I was looking at his rolling graphs and things really died down at the end of the year. By the end of the season, his rolling 15 game average K rate was 18.9%. At one point it dipped to like 17.9%. He did stop throwing as many balls as the season went on, which is good, but I think his swinging strike rate also plummeted. Yeah, his swinging strike rate was down below. It was like at 8% for a while, his rolling average. So that's even worse than his season long. And yeah, I think like his estimates were around 4 on the money, which is fine. So I think he's a solid like SP 8, 7, 8, 9 in that range, depending on how your staff looks for Warren. But I don't think the upside, it could happen in spurts like it happened this past season, but I don't think he's anything great. He was a kind of a high prospect for the Yankees, so he's at least he's serviceable now and they can use him and they need him this year for right now. I think he'll stay in the rotation over heel unless something changes, to kind of to your point about getting the arms back. But I wouldn't expect like Warren to be like a sleeper by any means. He's just kind of a blob pitcher at this point.
Another arm that is just kind of there for now until other moments are needed. But he's going to be a long man. He's going to make more spot starts throughout the year, most likely. That's Ryan Yarbrough. He's had his moments of being well. I wasn't going to go too deep on him unless you have any words of wisdom here. But ADP 623 over the last 7 days.
I would love that. I think he has great value in a DC Yarbrough because, to your point, if he's not starting, he'll be getting bulk innings, and he succeeded last year doing that. Whether I think he was in the Dodgers at one point or the Yankees as well. I think he bounced around last year, Yarbrough. So in a Fab League, maybe he's your last pick if he's still projected to be in the rotation come March. But in the DC, he has, I think, lasting value despite what his role is. So I'll be looking to draft him at some point.
All right, then I grouped these two together. Carlos Rodon had a really strong year. I was all in on him last year. Things worked out really well. Gerrit Cole missed pretty much all of last year. Both are going to start the year on the injured list. Rodon had surgery in the offseason. Cole's recovering from Tommy John surgery. So you're thinking Cole, second half of the year, is kind of what we're leaning towards. Rodon might miss a month to 2 months. I haven't heard all the final numbers there yet. Rodon's got an ADP of 204. Gerrit Cole has an ADP of 295. Both top 300 picks. Both might miss half a season. You never know. Like Rodon should miss less, but you know what I'm saying. This could be rough. I love both these arms. I understand the risk-reward here. You get to take those in DCs if you want. It's also a massive risk because what if it's worse than we expect? What are you doing with Rodon and Cole right now from what maybe you've heard as a Yankees fan?
I haven't really heard much. At least the Rodon surgery was just bone chips, I believe, or bone spurs. So it's nothing structural, I don't think. But still, so I got lazy with my rankings and I put Rodon 260. I put Zach Wheeler 261. And I put Cole 262 and I put them in red. So I will not draft all three of them, I don't think. I just don't want to even try to value how their partial season returns will compare to other pitchers. I don't know how they'll do when they get back. I trust Rodon. Like I said, I trust Rodon more than I do Cole. But I know you're a big fan of Rodon, and you were right last year. He really hit with the strikeouts, but he's kind of up and down start to start. He was a little more consistent in 2025 than his first year with the Yankees. And with Cole, it's this Tommy John. We're talking about both of them. With Cole, it's Tommy John. And look at Sandy Alcantara last year. He was horrible to start the year, and then given enough time, he got better. But I don't know if Cole will have the time to get better this year. I hope so for the Yankees' sake, and Cole's a better pitcher than Sandy was too. They're different kind of pitchers. But then Cole has more miles on his arm. He's a lot older than Sandy, so that could maybe hurt him somewhat too. But when it comes to Rodon and Cole, I'll probably avoid both just because I'm not trying to draft starters who are already hurt this year.
Yeah, I have, starting pitching-wise, I have Rodon as my 87th and Cole's like my 97th, and I won't be drafting either one, but that's probably just ranking them to if people are interested in them, but I'm not.
Appease the crowd.
Pretty much is where that one goes. All right, let's head to the bullpen. David Bednar came over at the deadline, took the job, ran with it, looked really, really good when all things were said and done. He ended last season with 27 saves. It's three straight years of 23 or more saves. Ratios got back intact. The strikeout skills were elite again from David Bednar. And let's not forget, he was in AAA for a while with the Pirates. Bednar's ADP is 39 right now. We know that the relief pitcher market has gone through the roof. That's just part of this ADP. So everyone, grain of salt, this might change, I would imagine, when Fab comes around. Maybe not. We'll see. But Bednar's got a high ADP. Where do you sit on Bednar as the closer there? Because like AZ wrote down, there is still Camilo Duvall, which I think is going to factor in the back end of that bullpen. Fernando Cruz is awesome. He missed time with injury last year, but we know the skill set he brings. So where do you sit on Bednar and company back there?
Big fan of Bednar. I've had them last year, helped me my one team a ton. And after watching him for however many weeks it was on the Yankees, I never knew how good of a pitcher he actually was, being able to watch him pitch now, Bednar. He has that great fastball. The curveball's nasty, and so is the splitter. So he's got three pitches that he can attack you with, which is kind of rare for a closer nowadays. I feel like most guys throw one or two pitches really well, and that's it. But Bednar's got three, so that helps him a ton. And he has he's like a bulldog. He has that. I know it's a fantasy show with all that. I'm not going to talk about all that garbage, like the non-quantifiable stuff. But watching him pitch, he's definitely just a closer. The Yankees like him. He probably reminds a lot of Yankee fans of like Goose Gossage, guys like that who were around in the 70s, 80s, who were a lot tougher. But Bednar, he's filthy. Like, I mean, look at the underlying numbers as well. He's just as good as the guys going around him, roughly. A massive K-minus walk, 26.7%. His Sierra and XFIP were below 3. His walk. So for having a okay walk rate of 7.6%, his ball rate's 33%, which is a lot better than what it probably should be. So I'm a big fan of Bednar. I put down Duvall and Cruz just as like backup options, but I don't think either one's going to challenge him. And now that Devin's on the Mets, there's no one available in free agency that's going to push Bednar from the role either. And the Yankees are going to make a trade. So he's the guy. And I think the only guy I have ahead of Bednar in my top five that you could argue doesn't belong is Josh Hader because of the injury concerns. But in a perfect world, Hader's better than Bednar. But because of the shoulder injury, I could see Bednar being my fifth closer in my rankings.
But I like Bednar a lot. I have him eighth, but I'm not going to argue with you on having him fifth. Like it's I have Chapman and Devin Williams ahead of him. But I get it. I get the Bednar. I like him a lot too. So I'm not disagreeing with you on that. My question more so, I guess we'll tilt it this direction because I agree. As long as Bednar doesn't poop the bed, it's his gig. Duvall's ADP is close to 500. In a DC, that still feels like somebody that might be worth grabbing because if something were to happen to Bednar, Duvall walks into one of the probably better places to save games.
Probably, yeah. So if you take Bednar in a DC and you want to handcuff him, go for Duvall. The only thing, Duvall's walk rate was almost 13%, which is not ideal. He was definitely wild for the Yankees last year. And I know you're aware of that. I remember you were talking about that with me on shows last season about it. But Cruz had a 12% walk rate himself. He just struck out more batters than Duvall. So they both had their issues. Cruz is filthy, though. His swing strike was almost 19% on the nose. So I guess Duvall would be the first guy in line, assuming that he's doing all right. But they both have their walk issues, him and Cruz. But Cruz is probably like a solid RP6 if you want someone who could get you some strikeouts in a week if you have bad matchups or you have a lot of injuries in the DC. So I think they're both worthy of drafting. I think Duvall's more of the handcuff to Bednar, like we were saying. So if you take Bednar, you want his backup, go for Duvall probably. And then, I mean, you could even take Cruz too. They have their separate purposes. I would, if you want a RP3 for a week, put Cruz in versus Duvall. I think Cruz will probably get more Ks.
Yep, I agree with that as well. All right, let's talk some prospects here because I think that there's some very intriguing options, especially one that I think might start the season, say, over a Luis Eel or a Ryan Yarbrough.
Are you referring to Elmer Rodriguez?
Yes, I'm a big fan of Elmer Rodriguez.
Yeah, I forget where I saw his name, but it was recently, and he is, I think, the Yankees' top prospect on the pitching side. In 2025, he threw 150 innings, so he's definitely workload ready. His ERA was 2.58, which is awesome. His WHIP was 107, which is great as well. Not a lot of walks, which, well, he had a 9% walk rate. Elmer Rodriguez, but he almost struck out 30% of batters. That's not going to translate to the majors. Maybe the walk rate gets better too, because they did have the automatic strike zone in the minors, and I think that elevated walk rates a little bit. So maybe the Ks come down if he gets called up. The walks come down a little bit as well. But yeah, if something happens and Cole and Rodon aren't ready yet, he's probably the first guy up. He pitched in AAA, only one start. But for a pitcher, it's different. You know, I don't think you really have to have time in AAA to get called up to the majors. So he's someone to look at as if you want to think like a rookie pitcher that's not like a big name where you have to pay a big price for him. I think Elmer's a pretty good flyer.
Yeah, I have a share or two for sure of him. ADP 565 over the last 7 days. Eric Cross opened my eyes to him on the Bench with Bubba AL Prospects show. And then I was on with James Anderson of RotoWire on Tuesday, and he brought him up as well on that show. So I think there's going to be more buzz surrounding him as draft season goes along. Who else do you have in the prospect world for the Yankees?
The obvious one is Spencer Jones. He's their big outfield prospect now. He's kind of like an Aaron Judge light. He's almost as big as Judge. He's faster than Judge, but he strikes out more than Judge. So it's a lot of mores and lesses, but he went on a massive homer binge last year in the minors, and I forget how the team was doing. I think the team was probably struggling at that point, and people were like, why don't they call Jones? But like with now they have Grisham, Judge, and Dominguez probably in the outfield. If Dominguez struggles, maybe Jones gets called up. If Stan gets hurt, maybe Jones gets called up. If Judge gets hurt, God forbid, maybe Jones gets called up. So there's past the playing time for him. But if he's going to strike out a ton, that's going to kill his value. So I think his price isn't terrible in DC's Jones. He 4,500. It's not awful in that range, but I don't know. I don't know if the power's going to translate directly to the majors with the K issues, but he does have speed as well, so maybe it's worth a flyer.
Yep, I like the idea there. To your point, I don't know where he fits at this point in time, but there will be, I think, a moment this year we do get some Spencer Jones. I'm with you on that. Who else you got for us?
The other pitcher I put down was Chase Hampton with a question mark. He had Tommy John in 2025. He was someone I was drafting. I think I took over Will Warren at times in 2025 DCs, but then he got hurt early on. And maybe if he comes back all right and they need help, Hampton gets called up. But he was a pretty big prospect for them as well. And then the last guy I'll mention is probably their top prospect besides Jones. He's probably ahead of Jones because Jones is probably the best outfield prospect for the Yankees. But George Lombard Jr. is a shortstop prospect for them. I don't know if he gets called up this year. I guess it depends what happens with Volpe, but I know reports have asked Cashman about Lombard. And of course, because it's the nature of baseball, he said that Lombard Jr. is like his fielding is MLB ready. It's just a matter of the hitting. He's like 19 or 20, but it's not out of the, like, look, I'm not saying he's going to be Juan Soto, but people have gotten called up at that age. So maybe if the Yankees are desperate and he's doing well enough, Lombard Jr., he could get the call. I wouldn't draft him in a DC, but he's more of like a dynasty play if you're doing like a startup or something, but, or a keeper league. But just a name to keep in mind for at least probably 2027, I would say.
For sure. All right, last question I have for you. We went through all the players. What are your expectations for the 2026 Yankees?
If it stays like it is now, pretty low, because they've done nothing. They have not done a thing to improve the team, which is frustrating because I don't at least bring back Bellinger. But I think the Grisham qualifying offer was like the writing on the wall for what they're going to do. And then Steinbrenner was crying poor about how they're can't afford whatever. I don't want to hear it. I did pull up the payroll for the Yankees, and they're projected to be at 280. Which is a lot of money, but it's not $300 million. Like they should be able to afford $300 million. The Mets are dishing out like what $500 million or whatever it is. The Dodgers are like that high too. Come on, the Dodgers creamed them in the World Series, and they're content with not trying to catch them. That's not the Yankees, but I don't know. It's been weird. A lot of people haven't signed. Like I'm surprised Bichette's available. Tucker, Greg, a lot of the pitchers actually have signed. It's more on the hitter side. It feels like. But I don't know. They need to make another move, and I'm not confident that they do. They should make the playoffs, but I think I've seen like people project them as the third best AL East team, which is pretty concerning.
It's tough. The Jays still look good. They keep adding. The Orioles are obviously adding. The Red Sox and Yankees are doing their things. Like, it's a tough division. The Rays are just going to sit there and they're either going to be really pesky or just get steamrolled in that division. We'll have to wait and see there. But I can't remember where I saw it or heard it. And you don't want to ever compare the Yankees to the Angels, but it feels like they're doing to Judge what they did to Trout. Now, sure, the Yankees go to the playoffs, but you know, they gave Trout the money and never built around him. They give Judge the big contract. They haven't really built around him. Like, they went and got Cole. That's fine. But, like, you need to build around him. Like, you have the funds, like you said, the Yankees have, the Dodgers have, so on and so forth. You got to build, and they're not building. So we'll have to wait and see. I don't want to bring you on a downer here, but you started this, so I'm going to keep going with it and see where things go.
I have seen that question thrown out there about are they wasting Judge's career? I don't think they're wasting it because they've been in the playoffs like every year of his career, probably, I think.
It's better than Trout in that regard, for sure.
Yeah, I don't know if they're pushing it to the limit because I think the Suns, I think it's Hal who's alive. He's more of a business guy, I think, like where George was the business guy, but he's wanted to win. So it was a completely different mindset for him versus the Sun now. So I don't know. It's unfortunate, but they'll at least make a trade at some point, but you have to start the year as well as you can. And they're not doing that right now for whatever reason. So it's there's time, but I'm not confident.
Well, Judge is 34, so he's only got a few more years to get off.
That too. He was a late bloomer, and now people don't realize that sometimes, probably.
Yep, I agree. But all right, we'll wrap it up there. As always, appreciating you joining me on the show, period, but also talking some Yankees with me. It should be a very interesting season in the AL East.
Yeah.
All right, everybody.
I might have to get back into listening to The Fan or something if things go south.
Oh, that would be some less. That'd be good stuff. Yeah. Bring back Mad Dog and Russo. Really, Mad Dog and whatever the group.
Princessa.
Yeah. Mike and the Mad Dog, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
That would get lively for sure. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with more previews and other content at Benched with Bubba in the coming days. But until then, this was Benched with Bubba, episode 804. Catch y'all next time.